This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour two rolling along this morning. Carolina Panthers are on the clock in our previews of NFL teams. We can do a division a week, folks. This is the NFC South. Not the most exciting division, but a division nonetheless that had four teams fighting for the playoffs at the end. Try to find that anywhere else. You couldn't. Last year, you had 8-9 and won the division with Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. But it also meant there was nobody in the division that was 4-13. They were 7-10, 7-10, 7-10. So that division sent four teams into the final few weeks of the year fighting for that division and the one playoff spot that came with it. Now, that is the beauty of the NFL. I will give the NFL this. That's the beauty of it, is that even in a bad season where things aren't going well, quarterback got hurt, or you don't have a quarterback to begin with, or you're making a coaching change, is that if you're in the right division, you can find yourself saying, well, we'll go to the playoffs anyway. And fans like their teams in the postseason, even if the chance of winning a Super Bowl is far away. There is something pretty cool about seeing your team in the playoffs, even when you know and they know they don't have a Super Bowl team. We see it time and time again. The Atlanta Falcons, for example, would have benefited greatly had they won the division and hosted the Cowboys. The Carolina Panthers may have kept Steve Wilkes at his job if he had gone and won that division and hosted the Dallas Cowboys. Who knows? But the reality of it is somebody wins that division and somebody hosts a game. How they look and what they look like is secondary. Just somebody is going to win it. So now you've got a division again where there's just too many questions, too many question marks. And the team we're focusing on today are the Carolina Panthers. Now, they have decided that they were going, when they were last year, a year ago at this time, they had Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, and Matt Rhule. And they decided, you know, Matt Rhule was running his system, coming in from college, and now he's got two quarterbacks, and he's leaning towards one. And that was kind of noticed early in training camp, that Baker Mayfield, even during OTAs, appeared to be QB1. But they fought, you know, back and forth a little bit, and they finally made Baker Mayfield. They got him for a reason, and they let that reason be known. And then the Panthers stunk, and just stunk right away. And the writing was on the wall that Baker Mayfield was not going to be the guy. And later they took him and they shipped him and he got rid of him and then he went to Los Angeles. And he played pretty good with the Rams in a fill-in role with Matt Stafford being hurt. He had a couple of good games. And that allowed him, as we heard from Pat Donovan this week, that allowed him to get a job with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, what's interesting is the Buccaneers were interested in Mayfield before he was acquired by Carolina, knowing that the kind of, you know, Brady was going to retire. And Brady, remember, retired twice. And in between Brady retiring that first time and announcing that he was coming back, they were flirting with the idea of landing Baker Mayfield, trying to get Baker Mayfield. So the Buccaneers were always interested in him. Now, I think Baker Mayfield is on his way to Journeyville, USA. I think he's journeyman USA. I think he's going to bounce around team to team, be on a roster somewhere, be the, in case of emergency, break glass, and hope we don't have to break glass. I don't think he's going to be the starting quarterback for the Buccaneers for years to come. I think that answer to that question either comes in Kyle Trask, which I doubt, or a future acquisition through the draft.
So basically,
I don't think it's Baker Mayfield.
You're thinking he's the new Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes. But yeah, I'd love to take credit for that. That was Phillips.
Right.
Phillip on Twitter mentioned that, and I said that's actually quite brilliant.
No, I mean, look at Ryan Fitzpatrick's career. I mean, he bounced from what he would be on a team for like a year or two just until they found their guy that they want to roll with.
Yep.
And then they ship him off, and he would do the same thing all over again. Great career, though.
Really great career. Yeah. So last year, the Panthers had Baker Mayfield, P.J. Walker, Sam Darnold. Those were their three quarterbacks, right? P.J. Walker, formerly of the XFL, a Matt Rhule guy. So that meant bye-bye when they parted ways with Matt Rhule. And they did, and they tried. They tried the college coach thing, and it didn't work. I swear, the next college coach that gets an NFL job, I don't know if I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
It is starting to look like that. That is not a path to getting in the NFL.
One of the stories I was perusing, you know, because we're going to have the good, the bad, the dumb coming up here in 10 minutes. But one of the stories I was looking at was yet another Urban Meyer story. And I can't remember who the Jaguar was. It was a defensive back. I guess almost got cut from the team for referring to Urban Meyer as a rookie head coach.
Oh, jeez, really?
Something that small and petty.
Yep.
Called, and he had to go and apologize to Urban Meyer for calling him a rookie head coach.
Yeah, because, you know, I've been a coach for a very long time.
Exactly.
Man. I've been a head coach longer than you've been alive. So before you go calling me a rookie, understand who you're talking about. Yeah, no, ugh, what a disaster.
But, I mean, Urban Meyer, I think, really ruined the, you know, hey, let's bring up a college head coach.
Oh, without a doubt. Lincoln Riley's like, well, I better like learning how to, I better recruit for the rest of my life because it ain't
exactly
look like I'm going to the NFL anytime soon. Seriously.
Hanging out in the Big Ten now.
Guess I'll be hanging out in the Big Ten. I'll be in kids' living rooms for the rest of my life because I'm not going to be enjoying draft room stuff.
It's remarkable.
It really is. It really is.
I mean, that used to be the trajectory. I mean,
it really was. It really was.
Jimmy Johnson, yep. Barry Switzer. I mean, I know I just named two Cowboy coaches, but still.
Don Coryell, who's getting inducted with San Diego State's head coach.
Bill Walsh.
That's what you used to do. You used to get into you got into the coaching business any way you could.
Yep.
Usually, if you were smart enough as a young man on a team, like maybe you were a backup tight end or something, and you realized coaching is probably in my game, you worked within the college program that you were currently on,
or you became became a grad assistant.
Became a grad assistant, right?
And you were coaching. I mean, you always hear that on the basketball, college basketball. It's like, oh, the grad assistant down at the end of the bench.
End of the bench, yeah. So that's how it used to work. You'd become a grad assistant. You'd make $1,000 a month, if that, right? Working. You'd sleep on people's couches. You would eat, like, bread for dinner. Like, you'd make no money, but you'd work 16-hour days. But that's how you did it. And then a college job would lead to a college job. So then you would go, I was a grad assistant here, but now they have an opening for a tight ends coach at this school. And you would go there and you'd do it for a year and you'd start building your resume to a point where you could have some options. And sometimes the options were get to go to the NFL, be on an NFL staff. Now you're better off trying to get on an NFL staff as quickly as you possibly can and do the $1,000 a month and eat bread for dinner thing there.
Yeah,
that's where you should make your you know, early career path.
Because, you know, what you never see is a college head coach becoming an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator for an NFL team.
Yeah, it's one of those scenarios where you don't make that jump. You may make that jump if you're fired, but you're not leaving Tennessee to become an offensive coordinator in the NFL.
Yeah.
You don't go, I'm resigning because I have an opportunity to call plays for the Tennessee Titans. It doesn't work that way. But look at the ages of guys in the NFL getting head coaching jobs.
Right.
34.
Never thought I'd be older than a head coach.
Oh, I always.
I still feel like I'm young. That you know, it's like I can't be older than the head coach of name your NFL team. But I am.
I always think to myself, right? I always think to myself, at certain ages, could I have been a head coach in the National Football League at just my age and maturity, not in knowledge, knowledge. Like if I was 22, I was getting out of college at 21, and I started at the Patriots, and I was, you know, cleaning uniforms and learning how to break down tape, like Eric Spoelstra in the Miami Heat, how he was the tape guy in his early 20s. Could I, at 34, handle the pressure of being an NFL head coach? Now, at 34, I was working in Colorado Springs on a sports radio station where we were sort of beers, babes. We kind of did that kind of radio back then. So I was doing like who's the hottest playmate competitions, right? Like that's what I was doing at 34 for this kind of shock jockey radio station I was working at. I wouldn't have been anywhere near the maturity of being an NFL head coach. Nowhere near it at 34 years old.
Yeah,
and yet Kevin O'Connell, I think, was 34 when he got his job in Minnesota. I think Mike McDaniel was like 33.
Wasn't Sean McVay like 31?
Yeah, he was like 31. Yeah, he was like 31.
Coach of the Rams?
I mean, you're talking about guys in their early 30s running an entire team.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the players. It's all the buddy. Everybody on your staff is answering to you. Right?
You're the boss.
You're the boss.
Like you're,
if you have a 65-year-old defensive coordinator, you're his boss.
You literally, like, at the age of 31, yeah, you have a staff of, say, 100, and you answer to two people above you.
That's it. When I was in Denver, I saw it with Josh McDaniels. If you want to talk about Napoleon complex, that guy came right in. Mike Shanahan had started – when Mike Shanahan became the head coach of the Broncos, he eventually earned the right to run the entire team. Like, he won two Super Bowls. So Pat Bowlen was like, nope, Mike runs it all. Mike is the de facto general manager. We have a guy that's kind of the general manager, but really Mike runs the show. Mike calls the personnel. He negotiates contracts. He does everything. McDaniels wanted that from day one. Day one, he's like, I'll take this job, but I want all of this power. And he was ruthless, man. Ruthless. But the bubble that he lived in allowed him to have that sort of mentality. He worked for the Patriots. He was the hottest head coaching candidate on the market at the time. But yeah, I mean, sometimes just think about what you were doing in your 30s, like what you thought about the world, mm-hmm. what you thought about anything. And think about, could I run a department of guys who had way more experience than me? Could I run a department of 90 young men in camp where I have to make decisions on their future? Could I do that? Could I sit across the room from a veteran and cut him who might be older than me? I'm 34. He might be 36. And I'm telling him his career is over with us. Could I do that? Not a lot of people could do that. Not a lot of people. There's some that can, some that can't. But that's the trajectory. Matt Rhule and Urban Meyer ruined it.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb Friday edition. Glad it came back after a hiatus for a while you basked in the Hawaii sun. But this is the Friday edition, so we lead you into the weekend with the good, the bad, and the dumb. What is the good of the day?
Yeah, the good of the day, maybe it's we've had a full week of the good, the bad, the dumb. Almost a full week.
Yeah.
You know, the last 4 days of the good, the bad, the dumb. But there's no other good than this good heading into a weekend. Everyone's singing now.
Happy birthday. Oh. Oh. Thank you. Thank you.
Now, if you haven't figured it out, yes, today is your birthday. So happy
birthday.
It is mine.
That is, thank you. Yes. I am having my brother in town. My sister is already in town. We're having a cool family event on Saturday. Last night, my wife gave me a cappuccino machine for
nice.
My birthday. So I've wanted one for a while. I got
are we,
one last night.
Are
so.
We cappuccinoing it up this morning?
No, I have not set it up yet. I got it last night. I got to set it up today. Like, I got to, you know, put it
you
all
you
gotta together.
You got to tinker with it. Now, is there, I want to know, is it shiny brass?
No, it is not. It's not a bevel. It's not one of those $1,000, you know, big gigantic things.
That's all I ever picture a cappuccino machine.
I know. No, it's a basic one. It's got the frother and everything. You know, you need that and all that.
No, you
got
to find a tiny cup that's yours.
That's right. I didn't get that.
Yours.
My wife said, "I'm not buying you the cup. You got to figure that one out. Like which one you like. Which yeah. you know.
You
so got to like,
find
right,
your special cup that no one else is allowed to touch.
That's right.
Because we all have that.
Yep.
So. We have like a cabinet full of coffee mugs, but there's one that is mine.
That leads me to this quick question. Anybody ever just go to their cabinet and go, we have way, way too many coffee mugs?
I think yes.
Yeah.
They have to be, right?
It's the go-to gift of people like, I need something for Joan at the office. Oh, I'll get her something funny. Like, she likes cats, so yep. I'll get her a cat mug.
It's not only that, but for a while, we were kind of collecting them, like, places we went.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
people. Know, yep. I mean, you know, we didn't get any in Hawaii because we don't need any from Hawaii since we have some that are Hawaii. But like last year when we were up in the Bay Area, we got a Ghirardelli one.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yeah, that's, you know, awesome.
The San Francisco Chocolate Company or the Bay Area Chocolate Company. I don't think it's ever been used. It literally sits in the cabinet. It's up above. It's not in arm length range. It's not where you normally go. You know, like I have a rotation of two coffee mugs on the weekends, and I just use the same two over and over again.
Yeah, that's what I do. I use the same cup over and over
and
again.
And my wife, you know, she likes having tea at night, and she has, there's like two or three mugs that she uses that she rotates through, and that's it. I'm 100%. We have all of these. My fun ones that change colors. Or
my wife loves Winnie the Pooh. That's her go-to character.
There
she
it is.
Collects Winnie the Pooh. And the other day we were going through the mugs. She had 9 Winnie the Pooh mugs. She had 2. She didn't know she had 2 of. And I go, where'd you get all these? She goes, people just give them to me. It's like every employee that I've ever had on my birthday or Christmas. She goes, this is all I get from people. Like once they know I like Winnie the Pooh, they get me a mug. I said, 9 Winnie the Pooh. That's not to mention the Mississippi mug, a Philadelphia mug, a Disney mug, like a million of these mugs that we've had. She has 9 Winnie the Pooh mugs. So she had a cabinet that we had that we weren't using anything for. So she put it upstairs and she just put all the mugs in the cabinet.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm not using any of these. I got one that I use all the time. And I go, that's what we do with mugs.
But can't throw them out.
No, you can't. No, you can't. And what I've heard is that people collect them. So if you do have some that are kind of cool and unique, you can find like Reddit sites of people who collect mugs and you go, anybody want this for $50 or $10 or $30?
I can find some of those.
You know? So there are collectors of mugs out there, apparently. I don't know the world, but people collect everything, right? They collect anything.
Yes. But now, speaking on this, you do have to add a new mug. You got to get a small cappuccino birthday mug.
That's right. That's right.
Happy birthday, my friend.
Likely to do that today or tomorrow. I'll go find one. So thank you for that. I appreciate it. So what is the bad of the day?
Well, I got one more good for you.
Oh, one more good.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, and it stems from, I think, the culture and mindset from our soon-to-become best friend, Dan Campbell. I don't know if you saw this.
Yes, I love it. Okay, go ahead.
I don't know if you saw the story today, but for the first time in Ford Field history, Tony, the Lions have sold out their season tickets.
They officially have
a wait list.
I don't blame them. This is an exciting team.
Yeah.
This is a really exciting
team. It's a long time coming, too.
It really is a long time coming. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I like Dan Campbell. I like what they did last year. They were a fun team. Mm-hmm. Even when they were losing, they were still putting up a ton of points. They just didn't have a defense that was stopping them on the other end. Yep, the NFL rewarded them, putting them in the number one game of the season, which is the kickoff game against Kansas City. You know, and think about this. How cool is that? Because they had the Chiefs on the schedule at some point, and in any other year, it would have been a average 1 o'clock Eastern start on a Sunday in October that had just been a game on the calendar, just one of many games that day. But they liked the Lions so much and were excited about the Lions. They went, no, that's a primetime game. That instead of that being October 10th, that's going to be the kickoff game. They could have given the Chiefs anybody to kick off the season with, and it would have been good. But there is a projection of that team that is pretty awesome. So, yeah, whether he could bring a real Lion to training camp or not, that's a really fun team. I hope they're good. I hope they don't let, you know, they don't go falling back to like 4-13.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so either. I think they have a real shot at winning this division this year.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, given what's going on with all the other three teams, I think they do have a good shot at winning this division.
I don't care what anybody thinks. I really believe I'm not buying Minnesota's 13 win season is something that's the standard in that for them. No, that was a lot of close wins that could have gone the other way. I just think the Lions are well built.
Yeah, I don't think they played that well, and it showed when they got to the playoffs
right.
for the Vikings. The Bears, you know, you never know about the Bears. The Bears could be good, they could be terrible, and you're going to be fine with them either way.
Well, it's funny when we did the Bears while you were on vacation. Were you on vacation when we did the Bears?
Yeah, I think you were. Yeah.
We talked to Mark Grody.
Yep.
And he said, there's optimism because the team won 3 games. Right. So optimism. I was like, that's great. It's a great line.
We get to 4 this year.
Yeah. And so he was realistic. He's like, it's optimistic in a 6 win way.
Right.
Right. It's like if we win 6 and we got better than 3 and we're making progress. So that you're feeling like that with the Bears. Vikings scored points. We had the radio guy for the Bears. They scored points, but they gave up a ton of points. They had winning records. They had a negative differential. They were scoring 24 a game and giving them 25 a game. Yeah.
You get to the Packers and you have no idea.
No idea with Jordan Love. This is his first full season as starter. He's not a rookie, so I don't want to say he's a rookie because he's gotten through NFL seasons knowing what to do. We haven't seen him do it.
Right. But is he the next Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers? I mean, because he's kind of following the same path line, is it just, does it end with those two and now the Packers are going to be in quarterback misery for a couple of years?
Are we really, can you imagine if Jordan Love was outstanding, Hall of Fame level play for the next 5 years or 6 years? How lucky of a franchise can you be?
Well, then it's kind of setting the standard because then if you get drafted by the Packers as a quarterback at some point, it's like, all right, well, I'm going to be, they must really like me. I'll be a Hall of Famer. I just got to wait my turn.
Yeah. I mean, 1992 was the last time somebody started for the Packers, not Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
That is 31 years ago. That Don Majakowski was the quarterback for the Packers.
Oh, I might sell some T-shirts from 1992.
Favre took over, and they never looked back on him, and they didn't look back on Rodgers when he took over. Holy mackerel! Oh,
so goodness. Yeah. So congrats to Detroit. That's a good.
Yeah.
It's a good time to be a Lions fan. You haven't been able to really say that in a long time.
All right.
Even
so
when they had Matt Stafford and Calvin Johnson, you still didn't have this feeling.
We got two goods. We'll have the bad and the dumb coming
up.
Glenn Davis is going to join us from Soccer Matters. We'll talk to him about the U.S. women's team. Got a nice little birthday tweet from Philip, but he says, thinks I'm crazy for some of the Dolphins predictions I make, but I stand by them. No, we don't think you're crazy. You're a fan. You're a fan. We may disagree on them, but I don't think you're crazy, you're crazy.
He's a realistic fan because he knows that all the predictions he's making is with Tua in mind, but if Tua drops dead today...
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. Well, poor Tua. Yeah. That's it. Bye.
Kissing to the big man upstairs.
Break an ankle?
All right, we can go break an ankle.
Gets the flu.
But this team, we know that the Dolphins are only going to go as far as Tua.
That's right. Them. That is
not going to be Mike White.
True.
I'm sorry.
That is very true. Very true. All right, we got the bad and the dumb coming up. And then on the U.S. women's team that's playing Sunday morning against Sweden, what do they need to change? What's a realistic look? All that with Glenn Davis coming up as well. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call.
Is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're continuing with the good, the bad, and the dumb. Glenn Davis will come on from Soccer Matters to talk Women's World Cup. That's coming up at 45 past the hour. All right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day has to go to New York medical baseball staff.
New York medical baseball staff, okay.
Yeah, because you and I, we've made fun of the Mets medical staff for years.
That's right.
But the Yankees have decided to play the game of hold my beer, Mets, because it turns out Anthony Rizzo has been playing with a concussion.
Ugh.
He suffered 2 months ago.
Well, is that why he's not playing
well? That's why he's not playing well.
Yeah.
They finally...
I guess we should have checked for that.
They took a closer look. It happened during a game where he had a collision with Fernando Tatis Jr., and it was just a simple, pitcher throwing the ball over to first base, pickoff attempt, and the ball was a little low, so Anthony Rizzo's head was down, and his head and Tatis Jr.'s hip met each other quite roughly.
And since then, he's been terrible since that moment,
he has not been playing well at all. It turns out, after doing some further tests and research, that he's been playing with a concussion.
That's awful. How do you not? Oh, goodness. In this day and age, I don't care what sport you're in. Concussions should be on the forefront of any. Anytime a guy bonks his head on anything.
Every time. I feel like it is now, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I noticed it I don't know which game it was. It was a U.S. women's soccer game. and two girls went up for a header. And then first thing I thought, I mean, both of them stayed in the game. But the first thing I thought was like, you got to pull them out. Concussion.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why you're not checking. Even the announcers were like, I don't know why they're still being allowed to play. Maybe it's because there was like 3 minutes left in the game, but still.
What was the name of that Yankee player that couldn't throw to first base? He was a guy they acquired, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he just could not throw the ball.
Second baseman.
Was it Chuck Knobloch?
Maybe.
One thing was Chuck Knobloch.
Yeah, because he suffered a really bad concussion, right? Yeah,
he couldn't throw. Like, he literally could not throw to first base. And he started getting anxiety over it. Like, every time he'd field a ball, he overthought it. And he'd throw it high, throw it low. He didn't have the natural muscle memory that just kind of fires it over there. It just started breaking down, and he couldn't throw to first base anymore. I think it was Chuck Knobloch, but I hate doing this because...
No, that sounds right.
It does sound right, because I hate saying, like, somebody goes, that wasn't Chuck Knobloch. He was a fantastic player. What's wrong with you?
I think he was a great player, but...
Yeah, he was. Yeah. I mean, he was good enough to... The Yankees signed him. Like, he was playing for the Twins or something. And then the Yankees signed him to bring him on board, and he couldn't throw to first base anymore. So I think it was in the 90s when they were winning and playing well and winning titles. But, yeah, so you never know. But too bad for Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
How did you miss that?
No, in 2000, it's Knobloch.
Boy, the Yankees are a disaster, man.
It's a rare baseball condition referred to as the yips or Steve Sachs syndrome.
Steve Sachs was another one that couldn't do that. That's right. Steve Sachs syndrome. How'd you like to have that?
God.
Golly.
I used to think Tommy John was bad, but Steve Sachs.
Steve Sachs syndrome? That's just.
That's terrible.
That's burying a guy while he's still alive.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, my God. Steve Sachs syndrome. Can you imagine, like, little kids just saying that, like, in Little League parks? I got Steve Sachs syndrome. I can't throw to first.
That's terrible.
Poor Steve Sachs is like, there's nothing I can do. I can't change it now. Steve Sachs. You know what? Steve Sachs was. Remember the early 90s, The Simpsons had that famous baseball episode where they had a whole bunch of players.
Yeah, yep.
They fielded the monster team for the nuclear power plant.
Right.
Steve Sachs was one of them. So they. And remember how each player couldn't make the big game, right? So they all were distracted by something. Jose Canseco, I think, was saving kittens or something, and Mark McGwire was doing something, and Daryl Strawberry was doing, like, they all were doing something. And how Steve Sachs missed it was that he got pulled over by the cops in Springfield, and they asked for his license. And when he gave him the license, they went, Steve Sachs from New York City. I heard a guy got killed in New York City once, but you wouldn't know anything about that, would you, sexy boy? And they kept him on suspicion of murder for a murder in New York City because he was from there. Simpsons were brilliant, man. Episode got in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
What if that
Homer
what,
at the bat?
What if that becomes true? What if Steve Sachs does get indicted for murder someday?
Right. Oh my God. What a great question.
They've been right about everything else. What if Steve Sachs is sitting there like, oh my God, is this Minority Report?
God.
You know, the cops are just going to come in and just, you know, detain me one day. Like, yeah, we have you on suspicion of preventive murder. Premeditated murder.
Homer at the bat is the episode. I think it was like 92. All right, what is the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, Tony, and I couldn't wait to share this one with you, and that is that next year we might be getting the enhanced games.
The enhanced? Oh, so this is, take it all in. Take all the Stenozoids and Zappozoids and everything.
A London-based businessman, Aaron, I'm going to say Aaron because it's A-R-O-N, no Aaron, but Aaron D'Souza wants to create an event to compete with the corrupt, in quotation marks, Olympic Games. And he says that athletes should be able to take whatever they want to take under medical supervision.
Okay. All right. I'm actually
I'm curious
about this.
Yeah, I put it in the dumb just because I'm like, it's...
Well, we don't really want this,
no,
right?
Like, no, I mean, any world record broken can't be a true world record, could it?
Right. We're running the risk of going backwards on this. Remember, I mean, We going back to baseball for a second. Okay, so baseball, when it was going through its steroid era and everybody kind of ignored it, one of the reasons that Congress got involved in it is because they were like, look. If you don't do something about this, this will trickle down to, like, high school players and even younger. If they think that injecting themselves with this stuff is going to help them, you'll see every minor league player taking it. You'll see anybody that ever had a dream of playing, like getting close, will take it. We can't do that. We can't have high school kids taking steroids because they think they can help them be Major League Baseball player.
Yeah.
But if you go into a situation where there's an event where you are promoting that or saying it's okay, you might just – medical supervision might be loosely defined.
Oh, I'm certain, right? It will be.
If you know what I mean, right? Like, you won't need, like, a panel from Johns Hopkins saying that you can take androstenedione.
What D'Souza says is that we believe that individuals are best placed to make decisions about their own bodies in consultation with their doctors. Therefore, we would welcome all performance therapies that are done under medical supervision.
Oh, you can see some doctor now charging to get just for written approval.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I mean, I can't. The insurance on that alone would be enough to make your eyes cross forever. But we could get it, and it could be interesting. I mean, you might see someone lift up a bus.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, just like someone just powerlifting a bus at the end of the day.
What kind of numbers could be produced? Like, how would their records, Olympic records, be different over certain sports?
I mean, you know, could you have a guy finish under 9 seconds in the 100-meter dash?
Yeah.
You know,
when Arnold Schwarzenegger talked about taking steroids in the 70s, he was like, people just were open about it. They didn't even – they just did it. And they just said, yeah, of course we did. They didn't even try to hide it back then. Now, are we going to go back to that? Right? Where we're That is dumb.
And will it have a trickle-down effect? I mean, he makes a good point. I mean, calling the Olympics corrupt, he says that, you know,
that's very true.
There's so many committees, subcommittees, this and that. He says, you know, it's really taking the athletics out of the athlete's hands, you know, because there's so many rules that you have to go through, so many things you have to follow, so many people that you have to report to just to, you know, run a race or
remember that
gymnastics got to be the most corrupt sport in the history or figure skating, right?
Without question. Yeah. That, but what was, remember the runner that smoked pot and was kicked off the team? She couldn't run at the Olympics.
Richardson or something like
she
that.
She had like just marijuana in her system. Yeah. And they were like, nope, you're not, you're done. Your Olympic dreams are done.
And it's
bye bye.
You know, like
what that was like,
and like what the late Robin Williams used to say is that, you know, marijuana is not a performance enhancing drug.
No.
Unless you have a big chocolate bar at the end of at the finish line.
Yeah. So, yeah, no doubt. No, that's the whole point. The Olympics is so dirty, it will never get, you can't clean it up.
No, it's
a web foregone. That just, it's gone. It's, you would, it would require so much uncovering stuff.
Well, it's that, you know, I mean, just the way I think that they purposely changed the scoring. The way they judge. I don't know if it was figure skating or it was, you know, I mean, it's like they're doing it on a scale of, like, it's not based on 10, it's based on this and this and that and that. And it's like you can't even follow the rules of how they're judging anymore.
No, it's crazy. It's crazy. Well, steroid games.
Could be coming next year.
Oh, goodness. All right. The Women's World Cup soccer team will be playing Sweden coming up on Sunday morning. We'll analyze that with Glenn Davis coming up next.
D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Coming up next hour, a little bit more on the Carolina Panthers, the team we're previewing this week as part of the NFC South, a team, again, that will go in with a rookie quarterback this season in Bryce Young. They're also a new head coach in Frank Reich. Matt Rhule, college coach, college system, college conversation, college treatment, Everything that college coaches do in college doesn't work in the NFL. We'll talk about the Panthers coming up. The United States World Cup women's team will be playing Sweden early Sunday morning in Australia. They went 1-0-2 in three matches in group play. They are the underdogs against Sweden, who won their group. And joining us on our Progressive guest line is Glenn Davis, host of Soccer Matters. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. How are you, Glenn?
Tony, good morning. Thank you for having me on. Looking forward to a great weekend of soccer around the world.
All right, again, 1-0-2, a draw against Portugal to at least earn enough to get in the knockout stage. How vulnerable do you see the United States?
Well, I think we saw they're very vulnerable. They have a chance to reboot themselves in this tournament. Another foot inside the post, and they're out of the tournament right now. So this is a difficult matchup for them. Would not be surprised if they are eliminated. But look, this is the healthy pressure you want. So let's respond to it, and let's see if we can go on a run. It is a tournament. It is a tournament format.
How, if you were to pinpoint something that's not working that had worked, what would it be? What seems to be plaguing this team in the three matches in group play?
Yeah, I think possession and the ability to manage games, I think we really have to put into context the fact that the rest of the world has really caught up. And for some people, it's like a revelation. It's just happening now. This began four World Cups back. Anybody who looked at the great soccer-playing nations around the world and women's sports and women's soccer and said, if you don't think the Netherlands and you don't think Spain and you don't think Colombia, if they invest in the game and make it more culturally appropriate that women are playing the game of soccer, and if you don't think they're going to rise and become better and grow, and by the way, with a lot less resources than the United States, you're kidding yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't something that just happened. That's the thing that kind of is funny. People are like, oh, my God, the rest of the world caught up. Yeah, they've been catching up for the last three or four World Cups. So big one to me is just ball possession. It just looks off. The team just, a lot of unforced errors. They don't look in control. They look nervy. So we'll see.
So if you have a match like they had against Portugal where you have a 0-0 draw, but when you kind of break it down, there were plenty of opportunities in the box. There were plenty of shots that didn't go. How do you take that? Is that a playing well and missing the opportunities, or you should have capitalized on, you're not playing well and you should have capitalized on those opportunities?
Well, that's the interesting thing. How does that get positioned by the coach? And, you know, look, this is why we're in sports talk radio, right? We can all
right.
have an opinion. We can position it from the standpoint of ultra positive, and we can also position it from the negative. I mean, the U.S. women have been such winners in World Cups 50% of the time they've won it. It's only been going on since 1991. If you want to put it in context to how long the Men's World Cup, I think the Men's World Cup was back in 34, maybe. So, you know, it is evolutionary, but this is where a coach really has to motivate a team. And let's see, with the healthy pressure, which I think is really, really fair, it's not unfair, stuff coming from Carly Lloyd and all. I mean, that's what we want. We want opinion, and we want ex-players like her who's, you know, scored a hat trick in a World Cup final. We want them to have an opinion, and if it doesn't look right to them, we want their thoughts and judgment on it, and I love that because I think that's the next phase of soccer in this country. We are so ultra-sensitive. We don't understand what it's like in other countries around the world, unless you've played there, how intense the scrutiny and the pressure can get.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it adds even more validity to what you're doing when criticism is coming. It's not just a go out and try your best and see what happens. There really is a standard, and they're not living to a standard, and you can break it down any way you want. We can disagree about that and whatnot. I agree with you completely. Let's get to
Dan
Donofsky. Go ahead.
You need healthy pressure. I need healthy pressure. We need people to disagree with us. We need healthy, fair debate. We don't need mudslinging. And that's what makes the world go round. I mean, I love to hear people talking about what's going wrong and how it could potentially be improved. And I think in our country with soccer, we're ultra sensitive right now. We are always in this mode of we have to protect and we have to present everything in just a glowingly beautiful way. And we know sports is not like that. Sports is a meritocracy. It's competition. Things go well, things go wrong. It's okay. It's not an indictment on anybody's overall play or their overall coaching career. It's just the way it goes. And I think we really have to improve in that. And I think that's U.S. soccer, that's Major League Soccer, and that's right on down to the U.S. men's and women's national teams.
The head coach, Vlato Endonovsky, what do we know about him? And I know he's got some success in the Women's Professional League. What do we know about the what he's doing and how he can get the best out of this team on Sunday?
Well, he it's judgment day for him. There's no doubt. It's judgment day. He's had tremendous success in the NWSL, the pro league here in the States. That's how he got the U.S. men's job. There's a lot of talk about his substitution patterns, his tactics, playing people out of position. All of these things come with not advancing and playing well. I mean, that's normal. There will be some that say, because there is a lot of young players on this team, and they are the future, that he's got to be a little firmer with that group. But look, I'm not at practice. I don't know. He does seem like a very calm and laid-back individual, although I know he can get intense. So, you know, look, it's judgment day. He doesn't get out of the group. It's the worst showing.
I don't want to get too far ahead, but if they were to lose, and again, you know, who knows, but if they were to lose, is that red alert, or is that what you just said, which is, look, we may have a different approach now, and we should not accept losing, but embrace the fact that this World Cup now has got some real teams and real countries being up that have raised the level of play.
I think it could be the best thing that happens to the women's national team program. I know people are going to say, oh, my God, he's anti-American. No, I'm not. I've been the biggest purveyor of women's soccer. I've called national championships, numerous women's national team games. I've watched the whole journey. I've been a part of it. I've helped to try to promote the NWSL and everything. But I think much like the men's national team, when they got eliminated, there was an arrogance around the team that needed to be, extracted and eliminated. And I think sometimes just a clean reboot is a great thing, puts more pressure on people to perform, examine the way we're developing soccer players in the United States in the context with the emerging soccer world on the women's side. So I think it could be the healthiest thing that happens, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's not a complete apples-to-apples comparison, but it's very similar to when the United States Dream Team was winning the Olympic gold in basketball. The rest of the world said, we will try to get close to you. And eventually they beat the U.S., and then the U.S. said, well, we have to refocus, and if we're going to continue to do this, it has to start. We have to know that we can be beat.
Yeah, and there's a lot of natural progression that goes on in the pecking order. You know, a lot of the older players that coaches are trying to decide whether they belong or not at this point, also honoring their careers. They get moved on. We saw that this gave additional time for kids like Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie and Tyler Adams to accelerate their development. And I'll tell you what, it would have been accelerated even more if not for the pandemic. So I think it could be a very healthy thing. There's a little too much individualism, I think, on this team from a couple of the older players. That I think is not beneficial, and that has been around this team. It sometimes to me it seems like it's everything but soccer. It's commercial. It's, hey, I'm trying to build my brand. I'm saying things to bring attention to myself. Let's get back to football and playing soccer.
Got it. Glenn Davis, and host of Soccer Matters, always comes on when we do have questions about the world of soccer. Appreciate your time, my friend, as always.
Tony, as always, thank you very much. Look forward to talking to you again sometime.
You got it. Glenn Davis, again, host of Soccer Matters. Women's World Cup knockout stage in Australia very early on Sunday morning against Sweden. A very good defensive team. And the U.S., again, not impressive in three matches, but, again, still has the talent. They will play without Rose Lavelle, who is out with a yellow card suspension. That could really hurt them. But I kind of agree with him in one way. I do think that this has the same or similar story to Olympic basketball, where the United States Dream Team in 1992 dominated so badly that it was, you almost felt like there's this they're mocking this. They're mocking this. But then over time, there was a loss in the FIBA basketball championships by the U.S. 10 years later. And it resulted in a bronze medal at the Athens Games. And the United States, we're not going to do that again. 2008, Kobe took over that team. And so we are not losing again. Could that happen for the U.S. women if they were to be exited out early in the knockout stage, especially Sunday morning against a very, very good Swedish team? All right, we'll continue. Hour number three coming up next. We continue.